Hello, my name is Karen Guglielmo, Special Projects Editor for SearchCIO.com, and I'd like to welcome you to today's expert podcast on computer forensics and e-discovery processes for the enterprise. I'm joined today by Greg Freemeyer. As co-founder and CTO of Norcross Group, Greg drives the technological underpinnings of Norcross Group's offerings and directs complex data collection and preservation operations for litigation support. He has submitted expert reports in federal cases as a computer systems expert and has been accepted as an expert witness in federal civil court and more specifically as an expert witness on ESI collection. Prior to the Norcross Group, Greg served as a senior internet engineer on several major projects for international corporations such as Siemens and Ford Motor Group. Welcome, Greg.
Hello, Karen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. And as I mentioned earlier, we're here today to talk about computer forensics and e-discovery processes in the enterprise. I'll spend the next 10-plus minutes asking Greg to answer a number of questions about today's topic. And today's discussion will cover both processes, explain how they differ, and provide examples of how some CIOs are increasing awareness and importance of these disciplines in the enterprise. So, Greg, let's get started. First, can you tell our audience, what is computer forensics and how can it be used?
Well, let's first of all talk about what is forensics. A lot of people are familiar with forensics from the various TV shows, CSI, Miami, or whatever it may be, but they don't really know what is forensics. It's the application of science to the legal process. And more specifically, it typically deals with latent information, so information that's left behind during an activity, whether it be a crime or some other type of activity, and then trying to build a story and investigate what happened during that process. So with computer forensics, we're taking standard IT-type skills quite often and using those to analyze user activities and the remnant data they left behind during those activities to try and understand what they were doing and what they were trying to accomplish. So one specific case I like to talk about, it's an interesting case. We had a situation, I won't mention any names, but a salesman left a good-sized company, and in the process, he took a lot of intellectual property with him, property that the corporation was concerned that he might have taken, so they had asked us to investigate. During our investigation, we determined that he had taken a whole set of very specific files and prepared to burn them to CD, and those materials would have been intellectual property that would have been inappropriate for him to take to his next company. So, unfortunately, we also, in the process, determined that the actual burning of the CD did not occur. We could not find proof that he'd actually burned it. We just found the process that he went through to collect his data and initiate a burn, but now no follow-through. We reported that back to the lawyer, and we decided that a PI would be a good idea as the next step. And we investigated some other activities that were discovered via depositions, that the user had gone to a, quote, electronic store of an unknown nature and had some work done on his computer. Well, we had the PI research that and go through and canvas a whole series of electronic stores and see if they could find where he'd been to their store and what he'd had done. We found that he'd actually found or paid a specific electronic company to burn a series of 5 CDs for him. So by taking the materials that we had previously gathered, saying these are specific files, specific intellectual property that he was attempting to burn to a CD, plus the follow-on information that he paid a electronic firm to burn a set of CDs, we were able to correlate and provide a very convincing story of what happened and that he may have taken his materials with him. That's very useful to the court, and particularly in a civil litigation, circumstantial evidence is very, very powerful. So that's what we were doing, is trying to use computer forensics to build a story and investigate a situation and help convince the court that some activity had taken place.
And can you talk about any other types of cases that computer forensics would be used on?
Yeah, it's used for a number of issues, both corporation versus corporation. Where we see it the most, though, I think, is corporation versus employee or former employee, whether it be sexual harassment, intellectual property theft, fraud, just various things, but quite often corporations are doing investigations of their own employees trying to look for interesting matters.
Okay, and can you talk a little bit now about what is e-discovery?
Okay, in computer forensics, I talked about we're doing investigations and we're searching for the smoking gun. In e-discovery, what we're doing is what's called a document production. In civil litigation, the parties have an obligation to turn over any materials they have relevant to a lawsuit. So 10 years ago, a lot of times what was turned over was paper documents. People would go through their files, find any correspondence, any memos that they had that might be relevant, and have them photocopied and turned over. In today's world, what happens is you go into the computers more often than not and look for that exact same data. Now, the sense of scale on an e-discovery is what's just amazing in the modern world. We've seen or heard of cases with as many as 100 million documents being turned over between the parties. The largest one we as a company have worked with is slightly over 1 million documents. So when you have these very large efforts, just an amazing amount of paper gets turned over. So back to the computer forensics versus e-discovery for a second. So in computer forensics, you're trying to find the smoking gun. That's a detailed investigation. You find a couple of hot documents. In e-discovery, you're trying to turn over the entire universe of documents so the opposing side can go in and try to do their own investigation and find the smoking gun from within that document production.
So what are some of the key steps in evidence collection and preservation?
That's probably one of the key things that a lot of corporations fall down on. They try to use their own internal IT people to do their evidence collection and preservation. And that's really problematic, or they even have their own people do an initial investigation, which can be even worse. The key thing to do when you're doing your evidence collection and preservation is to go ahead and get everything saved in a read-only format. The most well-known version of that is what's called a forensic image. A company like ourselves, or it can be an internal person that's trained on this, goes in and makes a true sector-by-sector copy of the hard drive. And it's put into a specific file format that's read-only, and then there's a whole collection of forensic tools that allow you to work with those forensic images. Then on the e-discovery side, quite often we're doing file-by-file collections. But simple drag and drop off of a desktop may seem like it's fine for an IT-type person, but it actually causes some issues. It adulterates the last access date. It doesn't preserve the create times. So there's various issues that can take place during the preservation that really needs to be handled by an outsider or a skilled person. Again, it can be internal.
Okay, and finally, at a higher level, how do you see larger corporations reacting to the increasing importance in these two arenas?
We're seeing more and more teams of either computer forensics or e-discovery teams put in place. We're seeing it even at a high level. Some companies have actually created director-level positions or VP-level positions that are managing this new, highly critical area that's tying in between legal and IT. These teams are various sizes. Some, again, are pure computer forensic people. Some are e-discovery collection teams. 2 months ago, I went and visited a very large corporation that actually had 35 full-time people between their evidence collection team and their evidence analysis. Now, they actually reported to a litigation staff that had 100 full-time internal litigators on this staff. So you can see that they were a very litigious company, and they had a lot of activities, a lot of their own internal investigations, as well as a lot of document productions for the lawsuits they were involved in. And then in addition to these personnel, there's becoming on the market a tremendous number of enterprise-class forensic tools and e-discovery tools that can be drawn on. So examples of those are guidance software, which is sort of like the 900-pound gorilla of the tools market, has a in-case tool. Guidance software has the in-case tool. It's a fairly expensive tool, but it allows you to sit in one place and work with the entire desktops and whole enterprises' systems to pull data in. And then other companies include Kazion, a great tool that's similar to the in-case, but it goes a more targeted approach, and it's really going just after the e-discovery type documents. Index Engines has a fantastic tool for pulling data off a tape and doing really high-speed analysis. It's really dropping the cost of pulling data off a tape for litigation purposes. FTK has got their own tool coming out. That's Access Data. It's a great enterprise-wide forensic tool. Vantos has a investigation management tool, which is really, really powerful for allowing larger corporations to control the overall investigation process. It's a workflow tool. And those are probably the primary tools I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay, great. And on that note, that does conclude today's podcast. Thanks again to Greg Freemeyer for speaking with us today. And thank you all for listening. Have a great day.